Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky, and welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Dr. David Liebman, who is a PhD psychologist, a prolific writer, author, speaker, and it's a pleasure to have you on my program, Dr. Liebman.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity to share some ideas with you today.
Well, that's great. So you've written a book called How Free Will Works. Probably one of the most important topics, one that is so difficult to comprehend. So why did you decide to write the book?
It's a fine question. You know, I'd written, as you probably know, about 10 books before this on different aspects of psychology and human nature. And I wrote another book that was very popular called Real Power. And this was a book I always wanted to write. It's a large book in terms of concept as well as actual word count. And it covers a wide spectrum of ideas talking about certainly the hashkafic and the philosophical aspects of free will. And then it also takes the reader through very practical, proven strategies in terms of implementing the ideas. In other words, the fact that we have free will and that we can make choices that affect the quality of our lives is one thing, but having real tools, practical tools, to be able to exercise self-control, to exert willpower, to set goals, to stick to my objectives, that I think is equally as important. So I really wanted to write something that would be comprehensive, take the reader through the philosophical arguments and discussions in a very streamlined way, and then really making a strong case for the following sentence, that the quality of our lives comes down to the quality of our choices. And once we really get that, then section two takes the reader towards how to maximize their potential and actualize their God-given strengths.
Okay, so it's dealing with the, you know, philosophy of how do we as individuals have free choice if God knows what we're going to do all the time. It's really more based on the fact that we have free choice and everyone has choices in their life, and then what do we do with those choices really affect everything about the quality of our life.
Yes, that's right. But the book does take the subject of free will and how it coincides with divine providence and how it integrates with Mazel and with Tikkun and with a wide range of, you know, philosophical questions, because I do think it's important for a person to really get, really own, really embrace that Hashem creates a level playing field. And when a person wants to change the quality of their lives, they need to change the quality of their choices. And the book talks about how even if a person has quote-unquote bad mazel, that doesn't mean that he can't enjoy a high quality of life and live a really fulfilling life. And we know people like this. We see people like this. They seem to have everything going for them, yet they're miserable human beings. Other people seem to be struggling in every area, yet they are successful in terms of their own happiness and sense of fulfillment. So by making the case first that we really are in control of the quality of our lives, I think lays a very good foundation for having that drive, that desire, that impetus to be able to create and design my life in a way that is meaningful.
Okay, so if we didn't have free choice and we didn't have Bechira Chofshit, then what would our lives be like? And if you were God, quote unquote, there would actually be no other choice but to give us free will, because otherwise how could we live our life?
Right, that's right. I mean, the book isn't even about the argument of do we have free will or not. There's a small section that just sort of cursory touches on that. There are other books that do a much better job, and that's not the purpose, to convince the person that we have free will. We begin with that premise, and then it looks at really the exact point at how it is that using free will, exercising free choice, affects our emotional, spiritual, and physical health in an amazing wide spectrum of areas. And so really, once again, it lays the foundation for us appreciating the power to which free will wields over the quality of our lives and how much control we really have over life satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. So, but there are people probably who don't have that much free will because of circumstances. They're kind of boxed into a particular situation, and their choices sometimes are, you know, I'm just thinking about as an example, is not maybe not a good example, but I know that, you know, when I travel to Israel and I meet with Israeli leaders, a lot of times they say to me, we have two choices. One is terrible and one is very bad. Those are the choices we have. We don't have any other choices. But I guess you're saying you still do have some choices.
Yeah, you know, you raise a great point. And Judaism doesn't suggest that every choice is necessarily a free will choice. What we do appreciate and recognize and own is that within that choice, how we choose to move forward is up to us. In other words, you can feel like you're locked into one of two choices, but even though they may be bad and lousy, there's always a responsible choice, a more responsible choice. And that ultimately, as human beings, as Jews, is our job, is to choose responsibly. It's not always going to be easy. It's not always going to be comfortable. It's not always going to feel good. But if it's right, the book explains exactly how choosing to do what's right, even though it doesn't feel good or looks good, ultimately bolsters our emotional and spiritual and physical health.
Okay. And I know that you, I know you talk about in the book that you say that the most profound pain is to recognize that one's efforts have no purpose. And I guess that's really a dilemma when people feel they have no purpose in what they're doing. And then how could you ever have satisfaction if you don't think you your life has a purpose?
That's right. And you're bringing up a beautiful point, and that is that in order to help keep us moving in the right direction, what Hashem does is he attaches pleasure to meaning. And ultimately, the more meaning something has, the more pleasure you can extract from it. So sitting on the couch, flipping through the magazine, eating potato chips is very comfortable, but it's not meaningful. If it's not meaningful, ultimately the degree of pleasure you can extract from it is limited. So when a person attaches himself to low-hanging fruit, to things that are merely comfortable, which is really an escape from life, they're going to be miserable. And that, Steve, is what depression is. Depression is described as by some of the deeper sources as a taste of death. Because in 120 years, the soul will separate from the body. That feeling of stagnation, of just simply being, is what happens to us here when we're not moving our lives forward, when we are not fulfilling our purpose and taking our neshama to infuse it into the physicality and to move forward and to grow and to progress. And when we feel stuck, when we feel stagnant, when we don't feel like we're doing something meaningful, that is exactly what depression is, that separation from the neshama, from the soul and the body. And so by reinvigorating our sense of purpose and igniting our passion and our reason for being here, we not only eliminate depression and anxiety, but we infuse ourselves with an amazing sense of self-esteem, and you literally just bounce out of bed with such a drive and ambition for life.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about a phenomenon that's going on throughout the world, but very much so here in America, where we're seeing the graying of America. Now you see people who maybe have been productive people all their lives. Now they're older, they've retired, and they feel they have no purpose. And at that point, obviously, they do get depressed. What do you recommend for them?
That's such a great point. You know what? If you look at the newspapers or the magazines and how they talk about retirement, it's always those same visuals of, you know, a hammock and a glass of lemonade or a rowboat and a fishing pier. What they're selling, what they're peddling is, when you retire, you'll be out of pain. In other words, they're not even talking about fulfillment, not even talking about living a satisfied, fulfilling life after retirement. They're simply selling you that you'll be out of pain, and they're appealing to people's base desire simply to not want to engage in life. But real fulfillment, real happiness comes from doing something that's meaningful. So when I talk to folks all over the country, all over the world about reigniting your purpose, this is true whether you're 18 or 80. There's always something we can do, something we can contribute, some way we can grow. Because as Chazal, the sages say, there's no such thing as a status quo. There's no such thing as simply something being stagnant. You're either growing or dying, living or decaying. And so by getting clear about what it is that we're supposed to be doing and getting clear about why it is that we're in this world, you become more connected with your purpose. And then when you begin to move forward in that direction, it just reignites that spark. And once again, you move from depression and anxiety to a sense of fulfillment and happiness.
Well, that's really great. That's a tremendous, tremendous point you're making. And so basically, the choice is ours, really. We're just saying the choice is really ours of how we want to live our lives. And that's what free will is really all about. But I guess when you talk getting back to the seniors, I guess they want to find a way of not having the financial pressure, but yet being, but yet living a fulfilled life. And sometimes that's hard to do because they don't know how to balance the two.
Look, for sure, there are definitely, and one of the things that I personally find very difficult is to see older people working when they can't really and shouldn't be, but they need to be able to support themselves. But I will tell you that the studies are replete with examples, and this is something Chazal told us a long time ago, that without a sense of engagement, without a sense of work, do you know that when a person retires, if they are not actively engaged in a other task or objective or goal, their lifespan is about 7 years across the board, which is an amazingly startling statistic. And there are lots of studies I go through that's actually, it's filled with a bunch of footnotes, interesting in terms of how you can literally be bored to death and find yourself just feeling, and there's no worse feeling than feeling that things are futile, feeling things are just hopeless. And that sense of hopelessness, that sense of futility can almost instantly lift the minute that person begins to refocus their energies and ask themselves the question, what can I do to bring meaning to my life, meaning to people around me? What can I do to maximize my time on this earth? Whether, again, they're 18 or 80, it doesn't make a difference. You can find, which is also a startling statistic, the number of people who are depressed under the age of 20. You know, it's really to reconnect with your soul, reconnect with the neshama, and be able to exert self-control over oneself, which I devote a lot of time to in the book, because I can know the right direction. I can recognize that I'm in control. But if I can't say no to myself, if I can't rise above my impulses and I overengage in the body or excess sleep, excess entertainment, or constantly give in to my ego and buy things I can't afford or live to impress somebody else, I never live for myself. And that is something that's very frustrating and very disheartening to the neshama.
And I like the way you take certain basic concepts in Jewish life and then amplify them. Like, for instance, the concept of, you know, mitzvah goreris, mitzvah, one mitzvah will lead to another, and even a small mitzvah will then let you get on to another one and another one, and you amplify that. Maybe you could just speak about that for a moment. I think it's a very important point.
Sure, I appreciate that, and I devote a lot of time to that, and that is, from a psychological standpoint, we understand this idea about inertia, about, you know, building momentum, and which is why on one level one mitzvah leads to another, but in another way is that our self-image, how we see ourselves, sort of contorts around our behavior. So when we want to move ourselves in a more meaningful, positive direction, you know, I tell you something fascinating is, you know, I do a lot of work with people who are depressed and anxious, and there's a lot of research here, and I'm not going to bore all your listeners with the studies, but one of the most important things somebody can do who just feels blah, the most important thing they can do is absolutely anything. The brain, physiologically speaking, it rewires itself when we are complacent. And so when we feel that desire just to pull the covers over our head and wish life would pass us by, and that's really what depression is, it's that feeling, again, of futility and not wanting to engage. But the most important thing we can do is anything. Get up, walk, go out, do something, and then we begin to build on that momentum, and we can turn the tide much more quickly than we ever thought possible. But simply staying stagnant only reinforces that sense of futility, and it makes it much harder for us to recover.
You know, that's why Dr. Liebman, I was thinking about, even when people who are older talking about learning Torah, don't you think they should try to find things that they really love to learn and they find exciting? Go to classes. There's so much to do online today, and that's why we at the OU are spending a great deal of time, energy, and efforts to try to develop programs for seniors today.
Yes, that's That's right. And I think that is absolutely critical, particularly as people are living longer and healthier physically. It is so pivotally important for us to maintain our emotional and spiritual health, which obviously coexist in a very strong parallel to one another. And it's such a really, you know, forgive the pun, golden opportunity for this golden age to really maximize. And now that you've got the time, you've got some wisdom, you've got a little bit of life behind you, you can really move forward. And I always encourage people, once again, in any age, to ask themselves, you know what, if I couldn't fail, what would I try? Or if nobody knew about it, what would I want to spend my time doing? And you begin to sort of ask yourself the right questions and open yourself up. And you're right. Whatever it is you want to learn, whatever you connect with, whatever you find a particular fascination or interest with, learn about it. And that learning in and of itself reawakens other aspects of our interest and of our soul. And we begin to learn and grow and become so much more enriched in the process.
That's really great. Now, I know that even the book itself, although it's called How Free Will Works, kind of the subtitle is interesting, The Blueprints to Take Charge of Your Life, Health, and Happiness. And I think that's the important part that I think people should focus in on, that this is kind of like a Jewish self-help book with, you know, with sources and rooted clearly in Torah Hashkafa.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, I want people to, you know, enjoy, hopefully, you know, the deeper philosophical aspects. But when you get right down to it, being able to kick an addiction, be able to exercise willpower, be able to stick to goals, being able to move your life forward in a meaningful way, ultimately, that's what we need tools for. And that's why I think one of the reasons why the book has gotten so popular, because it gives you those practical, usable, effective tools that you can implement right away. So you understand the larger picture, that the quality of our lives comes down to the quality of our choices, and the power that free will wields, and then you're able to go ahead and instantly put into action those dreams, those ambitions, and those goals.
That's great. So how do people actually get in touch with you? I mean, you know, it sounds fascinating. I'm sure that we have people, you know, in our listening audience who are running shuls and adult education programs and other programs. So how do they get in touch with you?
Actually, I'm a little bit in the dark ages, not so media savvy. We're putting together a website. I don't even really have a function, but they can go ahead and email samgold@live.com, samgold@live.com. If they're interested in a speaking engagement, I don't do counseling now one-on-one. I do some executive coaching and consulting, but my focus right now really is on this book and on promoting it and on speaking on subjects, whether it's Shalom Bayis or Chinuch or self-control or happiness, self-esteem, things that really help to move people forward in their lives.
That's great. Well, listen, thank you so much, Dr. Liebman, for coming on the program, for writing the book, and I'm sure people who read the review in Jewish Action will find it most interesting, and continue good luck to you. Thank you so much.
You're terrific. Thanks so much, Steve. You've got a great show. I appreciate the time.